Good evening, welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Matt and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Matt.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
bring grace and serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, right across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book staff study. As a group, we recognize the power of an alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the steps discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing steps 8 and 9. And please welcome our panel this evening. We have Shannon and Keith. Well, now I'll read the first paragraph on page 76, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So this one starts, "Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our efforts to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol."
Well, my name's Keith Gillette, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you.
And, you know, I like what that paragraph, won't mind if I look at that real quick. You know, when it says, "Now we need more action," you know, that doesn't sound like it's telling me to sit around and wait. It tells me that I need to get busy doing this stuff. I just laid it out there, all the things that I had done, you know, that had been blocking me from this relationship that I keep saying that is so important for me, and everybody else says it's so important for me to maintain sobriety. You know, why the dragging of my feet, you know? Especially when it reminds me at the end of that paragraph, it says, "Remember, it was agreed in the beginning." You know, so in the beginning of going through the steps, it says, "Are you willing to go to any lengths?" You know, and what sucks is at this portion, when I start to feel good and I don't want to start making amends, I don't want to ruin it because I'm starting to feel better, the sponsor or whoever's taking me through the step all of a sudden reminds me again, you know, "Hey, you don't like this? Remember, you're the one that told me and told everybody you were willing to go to any length. So either a liar or you're lying now. You know, which one is it?" And I'm like, "Oh, that sucks." It's pretty cool because I don't have to examine my life at this point either, at the eighth step, and look and try to look back again who I had harmed and who was affected by my self-will run riot. You know, it tells me that I already did that when I took inventory. And if I look back in the fourth step, it says this holds the key to my future. So it just kind of parallels that. I don't have to do a whole lot of work other than look at the list and see if I had omitted anybody out of the list. And if I have, I need to put it on the list. So my eighth step wasn't that difficult. I already had the pieces of paper, you know, the list of people that I had harmed, and it was just a matter of head nodding and shaking my head. You know, some people needed to be on the list, and some people needed to be crossed off the list. And the people that needed to be crossed off the list were people that if they came in contact with me, it would make things worse for them, not me. And I don't subscribe to the whole business of that these amends are for me. You know, these amends are for other people to put back or give back what I had taken. Because I made a decision, right? Didn't I make a decision way back when that, you know, my decision was to serve and to help. And so it didn't put me at the head of the list. These were the things to be helpful and serviceable to other people. And I found it very awesome when I looked at it that way. Of course, I wanted to be the one on the list and feel better about me. But my sponsor said, that's a byproduct. You know, byproduct of feeling good is by doing good. And I'm like, huh, I totally new to me. So I think that's all I'll share about right now. It'll be Shannon's turn.
I'm Shannon, I'm an alcoholic.
Shannon.
I did not like my eighth step at all. Because, yeah, I mean, I started with the list that I made in my inventory, but, you know, unfortunately, I found that there were a whole lot of people I needed to add that I hurt in an attempt to get what I wanted with nothing they had done to me at all. Because I just steamrolled over people to get whatever I needed when I was drinking. You know, but that gave me a little bit of motivation to do my amends because I saw, like, you know, I had all these feelings, all this guilt, and I was like, I gotta get it out, I gotta make it right. And but it was all selfish, you know. I wanted my amends to be for me. And I didn't understand at that point that they really are for other people. Like, I owe these amends. It's not just that, oh, it'll make them like me again if I make amends to them. It's that I really do owe them that to make it right, what I've done. And I never lived like that before AA. So this was a foreign concept to me. You know, my family was very much like, sweep it right under the rug and never mention it again and go on about your life like everything's totally normal. And that's easy. It's easy to do that. It's not easy for me to acknowledge my behavior, tell you why it's wrong, and ask you what I can do to make it right, and then actually do it. And, you know, that's what the action part says to me, too, is like, if I ask you what I can do to make it right, I have to do it. And it was tough with my amends because I wanted people to do the whole like dramatic throw me out of their office or whatever. Like, I wanted people to be like, you can get out of my life forever because then I don't have to do anything. Then I'm not responsible for anything. And I didn't know at the time that that's why I wanted that. You know, but I had all this shame and all this guilt that I wanted to get rid of. And, you know, it took me a long time to do my ninth step. I had the list and I looked at it all the time and I was listening to speakers talk about the ninth step and I was on YouTube like AA speaker ninth step like every night trying to figure out like how am I going to get unscared to do this. And you know, it came down to my sponsor telling me like just ask God to remove the fear and then do it. Like you're going to feel scared until you do it. And that was my experience with a lot of things, a lot of my amends. I was asking God like on the walk from my car to wherever I was meeting these people was like, God, remove the fear, God, remove the fear, God, remove the fear. And then until I opened my mouth, I felt totally fine. Like once I started actually taking the action, actually doing the thing, you know, I finally felt like, okay, this is right. This is the right move. And, you know, the willingness is a big part too. Because there were a couple people on my list where like I went through and looked like, am I willing to make amends? No. no, because I was still so resentful at these people. And, you know, that's the whole thing about working the program, is actually having to take care of the stuff before I just jump through everything, because that's all I ever want to do. I want to feel better right now. I want immediate gratification. So, you know, I wanted to just jump into this stuff with reckless abandon so that I could feel better. But, you know, it took a lot of restraint to actually just realize I need to do this with intention. I need to do this in a very purposeful way. Like, I can't just go about it any way that I think it's going to make me feel good, because I've been doing that for the last few years, and now I'm here. So, yeah, that's it on that part.
All right, thanks.
The next reading is also on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have heard, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
So when I first took these steps, I was just about 3 years sober, and you know, I highly recommend that if you're not willing to go to any lengths, you know, stay sober as long as you can without these steps, because that'll definitely drive you into wanting to take them, you know, or take a drink, one or the other. And so at this time I was in the Marine Corps, and I just was about a year into it, and at the same time I crushed it, you know, I crushed my life right into the ground sober again. And as I was finally starting to get sponsored and go through these steps, my roommate had gotten saved in another organization, and you know, and he was just as horrible as I was, you know, and but he wasn't an alcoholic; he was just, you know, spiritually sick human being, and his name's Andy, and Andy got saved one weekend, and everything that would come out of that kid's mouth was, I'm blessed, brother. You ask him how he's doing, oh, I'm blessed, God bless you, brother. You know, and so I had seen exactly firsthand what, you know, going to somebody and telling them that you've gone religion would actually do, because everybody hated Andy at that moment. Everybody started to shy away from Andy, and any kind of talk to that guy is like, oh no, I'm not gonna go talk to Andy, get scriptured out, you know? He's gonna beat you over the head with the scriptures. And so they shied away from him, and so when I got to this part of reading it with my sponsor, I'm like, absolutely, I don't wanna be an Andy and get just, you know, accosted all the time or just shunned from every single, you know, group. I was in the military, I had to get along, you know? But, you know, I'd owed amends to people that, I didn't really like, or that I felt at certain times that it owed me an amends. And you know, and it's funny because my wife and I talked about it the other night. You know, you don't make amends to somebody you're not done screwing over, kind of deal. And I laughed, but I took some time in making some amends to some folks that I knew absolutely did more harm than I had done to them. And my sponsor said, well, how is that any of your business? You know, this is all about you and what you've done. You know, we're supposed to put out of our mind the wrongs others had done. You know, what's more important, you know, this grudge you have against whomever or your relationship with God? And when he said that, I was like, oh, man. I keep saying it all the time. You know, my God is the most important thing. The sobriety deal is the most important thing. Is it or is it not? You know, or am I just providing lip service? And at that point, I was, the longer I drug my feet, the more lip service I was providing. You know, it didn't make sense. You know, I had to make amends to my team that I was on, and you know, because my performance was horrible. They were the ones that were going to kick me out after a year because I was undesirable, not because I was drunk, not because of, you know, that I was got a DUI or anything. It's just alcoholism, it was running rampant in my life, and I started to act like an alcoholic on that team, and they couldn't stand it. And so when I had to go and make amends to these folks, my sponsor said, make sure you don't go to them like Andy went to them. You know, he said, just admit your wrongs and what you're doing to fix it and what you're willing to do to fix it. And make no excuses, like, oh, I'm an alcoholic, I haven't taken the steps, and that's why I broke out into this way. And, you know, they don't care about that. They just care about me acknowledging what I had done, what I'm willing to do, and what I'm going to do later on, and follow through with it. My mother was the first one on my amends list. And I was 3 years sober, so I was, what, 20 years old. And I had made many apologies to my mother at that time. But the first amends that I had to make was to call her up on the phone and admit that I had apologized and I didn't mean a word of it before, and explain why I didn't mean it. You know, that it was all about me feeling good is why I apologized in the past. I just wanted to feel good, you know, on top of everything. I didn't know the damage that I had done to that woman. I didn't know how selfish and self-centered that I was, or what a liar, you know, or how much resentments had dominated my life in that relationship until this point. And I was to explain to her that I understand now the ramifications and everything that I had done to her in her life, and that I had no right in doing so, that she'd done nothing wrong in her life to constitute me acting the way I had done. And it wasn't to say, oh, it's because I was an alcoholic, powerless over alcohol, and I had no choice but to treat you this way, Mom. You know, it was, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to call you every Sunday from here on out, whether it's 5 minutes or 5 hours, just to see how you're doing and talk to you about you. My job was to be a son to her all of a sudden. And that's tough. That's tough. Especially my mother. She's very controlling. And my sponsor reminds me that that's none of your business. Your business is to be a son. And that's how you can make amends to her. I offered her the money, too, that I had taken over the years. And she said, no, don't worry about that. You keep it. You're doing good. It sounds different in your voice. I'm like, awesome. Immediately, I get to keep the money. And my sponsor says, it's not your money. I'm like, well, so what's that mean? Well, we got to go and make amends to those who we didn't know their names or never understood what we had done to these innocent people that had came through my life. How are you going to make amends? People that you just pickpocketed, or you took, you know, their spare change, or you took something of value from these people that you don't even know who they are. How can you make amends? Like, I had no idea. He goes, you get to buy big books. How about that? And send them to foreign countries that have the ability to get big books. I'm like, why do I want to do that? You know, I had no idea why I would want to do something like that. He goes, because you're giving something that doesn't belong to you. I'm like, oh. So it took me about 3 years to make that amends, you know, to pay off that debt in big books. And I tell you what, nobody can, you know, describe to me what the experience would be after having done that. Stroking the last check at Intergroup, wanting to punch that lady right in the mouth, you know, just smiling, taking my money and licking that stamp and putting it on, you know, the box, sending it to Botswana or Tunisia or, you know, Mauritania, wherever it was that I was sending them to. And I was like, oh, this sucks. And that post office guy says, good to see you again. I'm like, this is the last time you'll see me. He's like, well, why? I'm like, because I'm never coming back. I made my amends. I'm done. You know, he goes, that is fantastic. Is that what you've been doing, son? And I got to tell him. I got to tell him what I was doing, and I started crying like a tough guy, you know. He's like, "What's going on? This is weird," you know. And I just was, I'm like, "You have no idea, dude. It was amazing." You know, I knew what it was like. I knew. And I haven't taken anything that doesn't belong to me since. I haven't. You know, I left a command a number of years ago, and I had a parachute in the midst of all my gear. It wasn't my parachute. I didn't know I had a billion bags in my possession. And we started moving different houses and lightening the load and getting rid of some stuff. And I opened it up. I'm like, "Oh my God, I got something that's not mine." And I called them. I was, you know, I had to get rid of it. And I called them. They're like, "Oh, thanks. We didn't even know it was gone." I'm like, "I know, but I knew I had it." So, you know, that's how this stuff happens, changes me, you know. So I'll let Shannon speak a little bit. Thanks.
Yeah, so this, like, coming in real hot with the God thing, I did not think that was going to be an issue for me because I did not want to talk to anybody about God ever at all until I was probably, like, a year and a half sober. It's true. But, so, you know, I didn't want to even tell anybody that I was willing to believe in God. And I always made it very conditional with the people that I was talking to about my sobriety at all. It was like, "Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I believe in a God, but I am willing to believe there might be something bigger than me so that I can stay sober, but that's the only reason why." And it's like, I was so, like, embarrassed to say that I believed in God or wanted to believe in God. And I did want to believe, and it wasn't even a bit, like, I was definitely willing to believe. But I didn't want anybody to know that I wanted to believe or how bad I wanted to believe. Because I saw everybody else in AA who had this God thing down. And I didn't, but I wanted what they had. But I was too embarrassed to ask how they got it. I felt embarrassed praying. It felt like I was just, like, talking to nobody. I felt embarrassed praying on my knees, even though I was, like, alone in my room by myself. I'm like, "Ugh, this feels so weird." So, you know, it definitely was not the first thing on my mind to bring up God when I was making amends, but it came up in almost every single one of them. Like, looking back on it now, like, I realize almost every single amends I made, it came up. And whether that was just through people asking me about AA or, you know, it was mostly people about asking me about AA because it always comes up. It's like, they want to know what I'm doing, and I'm telling them what I'm doing, and now we're talking about God, and now I'm uncomfortable and I'm scared again. And, you know, probably one of the best conversations I had that, you know, really changed a lot of my ideas about God was one of my friends from high school. I was horrible. Oh my God, I was such a bad friend to this girl. And all she ever tried to do was help me, right? Because she knew I had a problem. I didn't think I had a problem. I thought she was just, like, goody-two-shoes type, you know? And no, it was really, she was always just trying to help me. And she was super duper, like, good Christian kid. And, like, I could not relate. But, you know, when we did sit down to talk so I could make my amends, we started talking about God. And we probably ended up talking for, like, a solid 2 hours, which I didn't expect. I was hoping, like, you know, get in, get out, go home, like, get it over with. But, you know, it was kind of funny because she was kind of listening to me. And then when I stopped talking, she looks at me and she goes, "I've been telling you you've needed a God in your life since ninth grade. And you just didn't listen." And I was like, "Oh God, it's true. She's right." And, you know, that helped me. That helped open me up to the God thing a whole lot because of the fact that people have been telling me my whole life that there is something to believing in a God. Like, there's something to it. And AA didn't put any rules on it. AA didn't tell me this is how I have to believe or how I have to pray or how I have to do anything. They just said, it'll help. And I was so resistant to it, probably because I'm oppositional and everybody had been telling me it would help. But, you know, it helped me go through the rest of my amends because I was now open to this idea of, you know, my real purpose is to be of maximum service to a higher power. Because that line made me, like, cringe the first time I read it. Like, I was like, that's a terrible purpose. That has nothing to do with me. And, you know, a lot about the way the big book is written is good for me because I need a strong message So the fact that it says, you know, your man is going to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. It has to be a sincere desire. It can't just be a desire. It's got to be a sincere desire. And, you know, that's why I had to wait on a lot of my amends, because, you know, again, like, being still resentful at people. And I tried to make amends to my sister when I was, like, in the throes of, like, seething resentment against her. And it was, like, it did not go well. And I couldn't figure out why. Like, I remember one of the times I made amends to her, we started talking, and she was like, are you trying to make amends? Because she thought she knew about AA, because I'd been in it for, like, 9 months. But I was like, I mean, she goes, you should probably take me out to lunch or something, right? And I was like, oh my God, I hate you. And I, like, immediately stopped the conversation there. And then I was so resentful about that I didn't make amends to her for another, like, 5 months. You know, so it's all this stuff. I'm like, I need God in order to be in a position in the first place to where I can do this stuff sincerely. You know, I can't do AA minus God. I tried and I drank every single time. And it didn't even take long. I drank like every 2 weeks when I tried to do AA without God. And, you know, I love that part about, you know, you may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. You know, because, yeah, it's nobody wants to hear from a fanatic, you know. And I tend to be a bit fanatical about a lot of things. So, you know, being able to kind of step back and put my ego aside and, you know, realize that I'm doing this, you know, for a greater reason than just myself has been a huge part of amends. And taking my ego out of it is necessary for almost every single thing I do in my life. So, you know, making amends was a lot about humility for me and getting myself right-sized and realizing that, yeah, there's a whole grand scheme of things going on, and I'm not the center of it. And that was a hard lesson to learn, but I still learn it every day. But that's all I got on that.
Next reading is on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done to him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill-feeling and expressing our regret.
I like what it's talking about there, that it's easier to go to a friend than an enemy. You know, my enemies, I'm already proving them right that I suck. You know, that I'm admitting to them, yep, you were right, that's why we're enemies. I was the crappy one in the bunch, and here's why. Friends, I figured they gotta love me anyways, and they'll accept it. And that wasn't necessarily the case. I mean, I had to go to some friends that had no idea the damage that I had done. And it wasn't that I was trying to save myself at their expense. It was just, I owed these things to these people, and I had to come clean with it. And some friends I have never talked to ever again, and that sucks, but I had to do that. You know, you don't get the, you know, Dr. Bob's experience was not taking the ninth step, making amends, and he drank. You know, I don't believe in a minute that you get the keys to the kingdom while people still suffer from my injustice. I gotta go right these things in order to get what you guys got. And I can't bypass it by just giving a couple head nods and smiles and saying I'm sorry. And, you know, not at all. I like what it talks about where it says we don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God when it will serve good purpose. You know, what purpose is that? You know, my purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. If this is going to help somebody else, you know, then I do get to disclose God and the fact that I am sober. You know, and in the beginning, you know, there was a couple people where I shied away from it. I just made my amends. You know, I just simply stated the facts and what I was going to do. And they, through my actions and seeing me daily changing and doing things differently, they asked me questions just like everybody does. You know, what the heck has gotten into you? Why are you different all of a sudden? You're not such a jackass, you know? And I'm like, you know, what do you do differently, Keith? You know, you just treat people different all of a sudden. I'm like, I go to AA. And they're like, yeah, I've been thinking about going to AA for a while, Keith. And I'm like, really? I didn't even know. I say, yeah, I've been drinking a lot. And there's my opportunity. You know, there's my opportunity to bring a beneficial message. You know, tell them what has happened to me and the success that has happened because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that wasn't just for the beginning of my sobriety. I stayed on a team down in Fort Bragg. I was on that team for 18 years, you know, and after about 5 years, everybody on that team started to ask me questions like, where do you go to church every time you go somewhere on a trip, Keith? Because you can only go so many times to church in a week, and with your mouth, and as much as you swear, what kind of church do you go to? And I'm like, great, here we go. You know, and I had already secured their confidence through my actions that, you know, they knew I was good on that team. They knew I was good, so I didn't feel uncomfortable about divulging that, and as a result, one of our teammates came and asked me questions later on about Alcoholics Anonymous and volunteered himself to go to the Navy SARP program. And he went there, and I think today he celebrates like 17, 18 years. You know, so it definitely has an opportunity to be of service. And that's why I'm doing this. That's why I'm making a mess. That's why I make a list. Because in the beginning, again, I stated that my life is no longer my business. My business is to try to serve and to help the best I can. You know, I ask God to relieve me of the bondage of self so that I can better do His will. And this is the part of relieving me of the bondage of self. This is how I do it. This is how we get to do it. And I can't live that way and live this way at the same time. So, I don't know. And again, I think I already touched about it, that others had done more harm than me and had a bitter attitude towards them. And I wasn't too keen. And I definitely wasn't going to go to these folks and say, hey, I believe in God now and this is what I'm here for. That's not how it went for me. How it went was I screwed up really bad. You know, I don't like you, but I still owe you an amends. You know, I didn't spout that part off. But, you know, I think that'd be a little rude. But I say that here's what I had done, and this is what I'm willing to do about it. You know, it's right at the tip of my tongue was what they had done to me and how I wanted to talk about it. And if the conversation went more than 5 minutes, I probably would have, but thank God it didn't. You know. How about it, Shannon?
Yeah, so that part about... people who've done us more harm than we've done them. I was so like self-pitying when I got here that I was like, oh my God, I'm the worst person in the world. Nobody's ever done anything to me. I'm just a monster, blah, 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 blah. And then I did my fourth step and I was like, oh, I hate all these people. I hate all these people. And then I was like, okay, all right, I guess I gotta go through the rest of the steps, you know. And I needed things to change quick because doing my fourth step showed me like, I have a lot of anger towards all these people in my life. And, you know, it made a lot of my amends difficult, particularly with my family, you know, because in a lot of cases, I was the one who had done more harm. You know, that's just the fact of the matter. You know, in a lot of cases, the people I'd hurt were just in my way while I was trying to get what I wanted. And, you know, when it came to my family, though, I was keeping score the whole time, you know, like, well, yeah, maybe I did this, but you did this, and that's worse because of this, that, and the other thing, and that got in the way so many times when I was like, and I kept praying about my amends, you know, and I would pray every day, like, God, give me the right timing, give me the right words, like, if the situation arises, you know, like, remove the fear so I can do this, and there were so many times when I'd be, like, about to start, or like thinking about starting, or like more like obsessing about starting, but then like anybody would make like one off comment and I'd be like, nope, can't do it. And I was so sensitive. I'm sensitive now, but I was so sensitive in early sobriety. And you know, it came down to the fact that, you know, I had to realize that, yeah, it did not matter what anybody had done to me. I had to take responsibility for my own behavior. And I was 18 when I got sober. I didn't know anything about taking responsibility for my behavior. And obviously not that that's an excuse, but that's just a lesson I had to learn rather quickly. You know, it was hard because I have this hang up on being right all the time. And, you know, I always want to let people know, like, well, here's where you're wrong. And that was not the purpose of the amends. The amends was not to settle the score. And that's what I looked at it as for a long time. I thought it was, here, we're going to settle the score. We're going to level the playing field here. And no, that's not the case. And most cases, I just had to be the bigger person. When it was over petty stuff, of course, it's about taking responsibility. But there were several things that I've made amends for where it was really just being the bigger person. And I don't know if that's supposed to feel good, but it doesn't to me. Like, being the bigger person just for the sake of being the bigger person doesn't make me feel any better. Like, I'm a little bit petty sometimes. And I just want people to know they're wrong, and I want them to know I'm right, and I'll do that at any costs. But I had to put all of that aside. Those were all old ideas. Those are things I still struggle with today. But in the context of making amends, those things had to be pushed aside. I had to not act like that. I had to make an active effort to put myself aside, which is not my strong point. But, you know, I just had to do my best is what it really comes down to. Like, I don't think any of my amends were perfect. I think pretty much all of them could have gone a lot better. But they all could have gone a whole lot worse if I hadn't, you know, prepared by, you know, talking about this stuff with people and reading the book and following the suggestions that are really directions. But, you know, I didn't really have a whole lot of dislike for people outside my family, and everybody always told me, like, the hardest place to work your program is with your family. And I was like, that's not convenient for me. Like, that's not fair, the way that that's setting itself up right there. And I've made amends several times to my sister and both of my parents and a couple of my cousins and definitely my aunts and uncles. I just have to remain accountable for my behavior, regardless of whether or not I'm comfortable doing that. And it is uncomfortable to admit I'm wrong, and it's uncomfortable to admit that I've hurt somebody, because I don't want to be that person. And that's the whole thing, is if I don't want to be that person, I have to take accountability and I have to behave differently. You know, I can't just say or think, oh, I did all this stuff, that sucks, I should be better. It's like, no, I have to be better. I have to take the action. I have to tell people, here's what I did. I understand that this is, you know, the consequence of what I did. I want to know how I can make it right, and then make it right. It's not just all for show. I'm not going to get any, like, I can't think of the word I'm looking for. It's fine. Nothing's going to come from me just saying that stuff and not following through with action. So, yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Next reading is also page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell them that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling admits his own faults, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam.
Yeah, that doesn't always go that way. Sometimes you're the one out of the 10 that happens, you know, and I had to make an amends where my ex's defects and her faults were glaring at me, and they were just so right there, and I knew exactly when it happened, how it happened, numbered, ordered, everything, you know, and it was facing me right there, and my job was to go there and ignore what she had done and not engage in any kind of conversation about those things. You know, my job was there to go and sweep my side off, and it was not easy. It was not easy because there's a lot of years of that stuff accumulated, and you know, I almost felt embarrassed. Actually, I did. I felt embarrassed about my conduct over the years, and all of a sudden, while I was doing my amends, her started to go away, what she had done. I mean, I still know. Don't get me wrong. I know exactly what she had done, how she'd done it. But, you know, at that moment, you know, what she had done prior was just starting to slip away. You know, what was more important was what I had done, that I didn't conduct myself accordingly. And she made no bones about what I could do and where I could go. You know, and that's okay because that's not what I was there. I wasn't there for approval or a compliment. You know, I was there to write it. And you know, subsequently, we still have not talked, and that's years. That's years ago, and that's okay. I made my effort, and the big book says that, you know, that's water over the bridge, and I believe so. I've also made amends to a guy that when we were in high school, I beat the brakes right off of him. I mean, it was awful. It was awful what I had done to this kid. And, you know, when I sobered up, I didn't know what to say to the guy. You know, I was still in high school, so I just looked at him, gave him a head nod like you do in high school, and just kept going. And, I mean, I put him in the hospital for a long time, and he had a lot of problems afterwards. And when I did my first go around with the steps, and it got to this point, I wasn't to give him a phone call or a letter. I was to show up in this guy's life. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, this is before Facebook, if you can believe there was such a thing before Facebook. And I'm like, I don't know how the heck I'm going to get a hold of this guy. I don't even know where he's at. Maybe he's in a mental hospital. I don't know, because he wasn't right after that happened. He did a lot of drugs and alcohol afterwards, right? So I'm at, that's like 5 years sober, and I'm still... don't know what to do. He's like one of the last on the list of my amends. And like, I'd like to, you know, I like to cross off lists, things off a list. You know, I asked my wife, I'm just a list guy. Goes on the list, I'm working my butt off at checking it off. I need to cross it off. It's driving me crazy, right? I don't know how. And I'm speaking at a meeting in Brighton, Michigan, and it's this big hospital. It's huge, right? And I get done, you know, and I usually stick around for an hour or two afterwards talking to people, newcomers, old timers, whatever. And this kid's sweeping up the lobby after the meeting, and got the mop out, and he's doing it. And he just looks vaguely familiar, and he turns around, and I was like, oh my God, this is awful. It's him, you know, and he isn't right. He's still not right today. And he goes, hey, Keith, I know you. I'm like, oh, Jesus, I don't even know what to do. You know, but yet I do. I said, Bobby, how you doing? He goes, well, you know, I just got out of another methadone clinic, and now they got me in doing this job. And I was just like, oh, my God. You know, I know I didn't do that to him, but I did a lot of things to this kid. And I said, well, you got a minute? He goes, I got all the time in the world. And he sat down, and we talked. We talked about Alcoholics Anonymous, and we talked about Narcotics Anonymous for him, and what we were both doing to try to get better in our lives. And I finally got to look at him and said, what I had done to you is, you know, there are no words. He goes, Keith, I was just as guilty as you were. And I was like, oh, you know, I don't know about that, but... I know what I had done to you is a lot worse than what you had ever done to me. And whatever I can do to right that, I'll do it. You know, I'll do it. And that word's kind of came to bite me in the butt one day. You know, not with that guy, but I was at IKIPA in Detroit, 2001, and you know, I was talking about that. I was speaking, and I was like talking about making amends and anytime, any place, anywhere. You know, still some amends are out there that I don't know what I owe, and I'm ready to do it. You know, and I got to do these things for the sobriety. And after I had shared, this kid walks up to me. And it's the worst thing you'll ever hear in Alcoholics Anonymous. Hey, Keith, you remember me? It's the worst words you ever want to hear. The worst question. I'm like, absolutely no. He goes, we went to high school together. And I knew it wasn't going to get good after that. But I was like, no, that was a long time ago. I have no idea who you are. He goes, my name is Rob. And, you know, he beat me up and burned my car because he thought it was funny one day. I didn't know what to do. I said, holy crap, I remember you exactly. And I said, listen, Rob, I got some money saved up, and you know, you need a car, I'll definitely will go down and get a car right now. You know, whatever I got to do to make this right. And he goes, no, you saved my life. I'm like, that's weird. How did I save your life? You know, I mean, beat you into sobriety or something. And you know, just thinking this out loud, thinking this to my, I don't say it, you know. And he goes, do you remember a girl named Kim? And I was like, yeah, I remember her. I took her through the steps when I was on leave from the Marine Corps, and took her through the steps real quick, and then I left and she got a sponsor. I said, yeah, I remember her. Well, we worked together, and she got taken through the steps and got sober and active in AA, and I showed up to work drunk, and they were going to fire me. I was like, wow, what happened? Well, she told me that I needed to go to treatment because she was trying to help me out. And I went to treatment. And 3 years later, we started to date. And then 3 years after that, we got married. We've been married ever since, and I'd like to thank you. I'm like, oh, my God, I got to save some money. Thank God. I'm telling you, sometimes those thoughts still come to my mind. Like, thank God. You know, you have no idea what you're going to do. The amends is going to change your life or how it's going to affect your life later on. But I just know that I owe them and I need to do it. And the results is always up to God, what happens after that. So I'll turn it over to Shannon.
Yeah, that whole we will never get over drinking until we've done our utmost to straighten out the past. I didn't particularly care for that sentence at the start of things. If you can't tell from what I've already said, like, I wasn't super into the process when I first got to AA. It was kind of like I knew I had to do it because everything else, like, all my other options had been exhausted at that point. And I figured, like, everybody kept telling me, like, if you take the steps, you'll know if they work. And that was, like, that logic was way too solid for me to argue with. So I just decided, like, all right, I guess I'll do them. And, you know, nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until I do that. That's crazy. Nothing worthwhile until I clean up my side of the street. Like, nothing. And that sucks. And, you know, and then never trying to tell the other person what they should do. That's not in my wheelhouse either. If I have to clean up my side of the street, I'm going to want to tell you what you can do to make it easier for me to keep it clean. But, you know, the point is, what I've found with amends and with this program and with just honestly, like, living my life, I've found that, you know, nothing you can do to me is going to make me drink. But the way that I treat other people, like what I can do to you, that'll make me drink. For sure. So that's why I have to keep my side of the street clean. It's not even about your side of the street. Because I can sit across the street all day long and point out everything that's wrong. And I can sit there completely justified in the way I feel about you and the way I feel about the way you live your life and how can you be that way and then say this and then act like this and everybody thinks this about you, but here's how you really are and blah, 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 blah. It gets completely away from me. And that's so typical, like, alcoholic behavior to me, is just to take something that's supposed to be about my behavior and I don't want to look at it so bad that I'm going to turn it into something completely different, and I'm going to make it about you, and I'm going to make it about this, and I'm going to make it about that. And it's become easier to sweep off my side of the street, per se, you know? And I find out that there are things that I just have to live with, too. Because I don't get to make amends for everything. Because I don't get to, you know, save myself at somebody else's cost. And there are several things that I've wanted to make amends for because I just have guilt over it, you know? And I don't get to do that if it's going to hurt somebody else. So there are some things on my little side of the street that are just going to have to stay there. And, you know, I make amends where I can, but I have no right. It's not even there's no need. I have no right to hurt somebody else to make myself feel better. Like, I would love to get some stuff off my chest, but it's like, if you don't need to know, if knowing is just going to hurt you, and I'm doing everything I can to make it right otherwise, I just have to sit with it. But, you know, I can't use guilt and remorse and whatever. Like, I can't be all doom and gloom about it, or I'm not going to be useful to anybody. So the way I can be useful is to actually keep tabs on all the other things that I do daily, probably. You know, and the 10th step is huge. Because do I owe an apology is a big question on there. And, you know, luckily I can say these days most of the time the answer is no. But when the answer is yes, I don't always hop right to making those apologies that I need to make. But, you know, it gets overwhelming. If I was 100% on top of this stuff every day, it would just stay clean. You know, I wouldn't really have to do much work, but, you know, I've found myself at several different points in my sobriety where I'm just like, I need to do an inventory right now or I might die, like, tomorrow. And it's because all this stuff builds up if I don't take care of it right away, you know? And I don't like to take care of it right away because it's uncomfortable and it's hard and I don't like being wrong. And, you know, but the benefit of actually doing the stuff is so much better than waiting forever and letting it just eat at me and, you know, make me even less useful every day. Because the more I'm thinking about myself and what I've done and how I feel about me, the less I'm thinking about what I can do for anybody else on the face of the planet, let alone alcoholics. And, you know, and it changes everything. I go into meetings and I start thinking I'm less than everybody around me because, you know, I have all this stuff that I haven't made amends for and, you know, all these resentments I'm sitting on and all this other stuff going on. And how am I useful? Sitting in a room full of alcoholics thinking about myself. I'm not. And, you know, so a lot of it starts with inventory for me because now I know where I need to look. If I do an inventory and I see that, you know, people have come up on it, I need to see, okay, where do I owe an amends in this situation? And it is not like a super fun, thrilling process, but, you know, the results of doing it, you know, like the promises, the 9th step promises. I hate when people just call them the promises because I remember being like really brand new in AA and people were reading the promises and the whole like, are these extravagant promises? We think not. I was like, I think so. That sounds kind of insane. And I didn't know I wasn't getting them. And I wasn't getting them because they're the 9th step promises. They're not just like immediate promises. But anyway, sorry, I got off on a tangent. Point being, you know, the promises did start to come true for me. And that was incredible. Like the relief I felt when I really was honestly and sincerely making my amends. And I was going through that process and I started to feel like, you know, I was on par with the rest of the world and I didn't feel 2 feet tall compared to everybody around me. It was incredible. And I was actually being useful, not just feeling useful. I was being useful. And, you know, it opened up the world for me because instead of sitting in my head all day long looking at what I've done and who that makes me and who I should be, how I should act, and, you know, all this shame, because like guilt is me wanting to be better, but shame is me being scared of how you think about me. And I can't function like that. I can't go through the world doing anything useful if all I'm concerned about is what you think about me. And being terrified of you seeing who I am and how I act. And that's the whole thing about just being better for me. I have to keep track of how I act so that I can do something different the next day. You know, if I don't look at it, if I don't keep my stuff squared away, it's self-will run riot. I'm gonna run my life into the ground. And I do, and I have, and I probably will again. But, you know, the great thing about that is I have the program to come back to. I can do the steps as much as I want. It's not like a one-shot deal. Like, I can do it over and over, which is cool, because I need to all the time. But, you know, I'm thankful for this stuff, because it's really not that complicated. It's hard, but it's pretty simple, and that's good, because I'll overcomplicate anything. Oh my God, 7:57. Sorry, I'll be quiet. Thank
you. I'm just gonna put the last two paragraphs together, and then if you all wanna do a little closing summary, whatever. Page 80, or 78 is the first paragraph. Most alcoholics owe money. Do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. And on 79, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
Yeah, I had to make amends to an organization that I quite honestly asked my sponsors, I don't know if they're going to actually throw me out of the military or they're going to let me stay. And his words were to me were, I have no idea either, Keith. I'm not in charge of you. He said, but I can guarantee it one of two things. He says, one, if you do get thrown out of the military, you'll be able to get thrown out with dignity and grace and have a purpose. Doesn't sound very good. He goes, and if you get to stay in, you'll be able to stay in with dignity, purpose, and sobriety. I'm like, that sounds like the same thing. He goes, that sounds like better than nothing, doesn't it? I said, absolutely. So regardless of the personal consequences, you know, I might get thrown out at that point. But what's more important? You know, my willingness to go to any lengths to get a spiritual experience is the most important thing. Because I knew what it was like to have a job without a spiritual condition, and I knew what it was like to be sober without a spiritual condition, and I knew what it was like to be drunk without a spiritual condition. And bottom line is that I knew that above everything I needed this thing, regardless of what personal consequences were going to be. Whether I was liked by everybody or liked by none, this was the most important, because I didn't have it, and I've seen other people have it in their lives, and it looked way more attractive to me than what I had going on in mine. I could not stand to be sober without this deal. And I knew I couldn't drink. I've never dodged a creditor telling them that I was, you know, not an alcoholic. They don't care. I mean, they just want their money. But just in calling them in the past, they've made plenty of arrangements, you know, and sometimes knocked it off a little bit, the interest. I didn't have to pay any of the interest. So long as I made the agreement and made the arrangements and I kept true to it, you know, it was amazing. You know, and some people, like I said, told me that I didn't owe them anything anymore, and I'm buying big books all of a sudden, or I'm donating to some organization that's nonprofit all over again. And I'm like, God, you know, they tell me it's not my money. I already got the goods. Now give it back. You know, so I made arrangements and I made it good. So, that's all I got for these things.
I'm gonna keep it real short and sweet. So that last part, we must not shrink in anything. I had so much fear when I was going through the steps and when I was new in the program and all that, that I really needed things to say to myself over and over and over again, and that was one of them. Around the same general vicinity of the book, there's like a way, like crazier one that says, like, as God's people we stand on our own feet, we don't crawl before anyone. And I like that one a lot, because I, you know, it tells you not to be servile or scraping, which is easy. It's easy for me to go to somebody and be like, I'm so sorry, I'm the worst. And it's like, that's not the point. And then, you know, being willing to face the personal consequences. It doesn't say I should be, it says I have to be. I have to be willing to face the personal consequences, and I must not shrink at anything. And that's been my experience with a whole lot of sobriety, is I'm scared, but I'm gonna do it. And, you know, that happens with me, you know, even today. There's every time I have to do anything difficult, I'm scared, but I'm gonna do it. And that's been a huge part of my experience with AA, so. That's all.
Thank you. All right, so the baskets that are going around, it's a celebration. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seven traditions are essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but the inner group, central office, local offices, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. While the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, you may want to remember that the dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. Home group members, raise your hands. You can come see any of us if you want to join. Any newcomers in their first 30 days of sobriety would like to welcome you.
Hi, Teresa. Welcome. I'm
Lou,
and I'm an alcoholic. AA literature is on the table over there. You can see any of the home group members after the meeting if you'd like to purchase anything. Sponsorship and AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Feel free to come up to me. Smokers can use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. Meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our panel again, please? After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the steps discussed tonight at meeting after the meeting held at Plaza del Sol, which is down Colonial Avenue right before the train tracks. And someone volunteer to read the last two paragraphs of 164, just got a book.
Hi, Lily.
My name's Lily and I'm alcoholic.
Hey, Lily.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we are only alone. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. At 10 in your morning meditation, what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't gotten. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join Him. He shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, sir. And my voice, the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father.